Barney knows it off by heart, and he sings with me.
We started as a pop.
Hello, I'm Eric Anderson, host of the YXC Underground Podcast, and welcome to the Young Country Rebels.
Music of the Beatles, the Eagles, Elton John, CCR and Elvis, the list goes on and on.
The Young Country Rebels is a group of residents from Sherbrooke Community Center, a long-term care home here in Saskatoon, and is led by Sherbrooke's music therapist, Candace Ukrainitz.
Willie Nelson is our hero. We all love Johnny Cash. Marty Robbins is...
Now, full disclosure, I work at Sherbrooke as its communications leader, and I've had the privilege of watching Candace for the past 8 years create well-being in the lives of residents as a music therapist. Candace Ukrainitz is a featured guest in Season 6, Episode 7 of YXC Underground, and I am so excited for you to meet her. Music plays so many roles in our lives. It brings us together through live concerts. It can help us change our mood or amplify how we are feeling in a certain moment. And as you will hear in this episode, music has the power to form meaningful relationships and spark joy in people with physical and cognitive challenges. Candace shares her passion for forming those relationships in our conversation, and it's something she has been doing at Sherbrooke for many years. She grew up playing all sorts of instruments. She took piano and cello lessons as a kid, and today can often be seen sitting next to a resident with her guitar or auto harp in her hands. But what Candace really loves to do is sing. Candace would sing as a kid all through her house and says that singing gets out her emotions. Her love of music led her down the path of music therapy, and the 263 residents at Sherbrooke are the beneficiaries of her gifts. Susan Hayward and Melinda Sweeney see the impact of Candace's work with residents. Susan is a recreation coordinator and Melinda is a neighborhood care manager. Susan notes how gifted Candace is at working with residents who have dementia.
Candace's experience working with people with dementia is so heartwarming to watch. She has such a loving kindness, as I'd said before, but she has the patience, and she reads people well. Like Melinda said, she works with people individually and can modify her programs in order to reach them.
And if I was going to say something about Candace, I think Candace is she's gifted, just naturally gifted, right? You could try to learn or teach this, you know, type of like connecting with people with dementia, but some people just, once you know how, once you feel how, it makes all the difference in the world. It's just a different dimension of connectedness, right? When you really understand how to connect to the individual, and she has that naturally. So that's what makes it just work so seamlessly and effortlessly looking from the outside. I mean, it's her skill, yet it's her natural talent.
Okay, here we go. Yes for you. Ready? Love me tender, love me true.
It turns out March is Music Therapy Month. I wish I could say I planned it this way to share Candace's story this month, but I am not that organized. However, I am hopeful this episode will spark a conversation in our Saskatoon community about the benefits music therapy has on people. Okay, on to the interview. I met Candace in Sherbrooke's greenhouse a few days after Valentine's Day. She brought a cart full of musical instruments with her, and you'll hear a few during our conversation. You'll also hear some powerful stories when it comes to music making a difference in the lives of people with physical and cognitive challenges. And of course, why this work means so much to Candace. We sat down in the greenhouse, and I started by asking Candace, what exactly does a music therapist do?
like that's the most common question, right, to ask is like, you know, what does a music therapist do? And so, and often people ask, what's the difference between a music therapist and somebody who just plays music? Like, why can't you just be the same as them? And that's very valid because music has many, many therapeutic qualities all by itself, right? So it lends itself to being very therapeutic. But when you use that music in a way to actually try to accomplish a goal, then that is when we get into the music therapy part, right? So we're actually setting out to accomplish something in it. So instead of it just, it, I mean, because music by its own right can be very therapeutic for lots of people, right? I mean, we have, I mean, I don't know if you, but even when you're listening in your vehicle or, you know, those, you're just happily enjoying music. It brings back memories. It can do all of those things. And then when we take that a step further with music therapy, we can actually use those things. So if I'm doing a discussion group on, like we just did, Valentine's Day. So we did music and discussion of Valentine's. And so if we're doing something like that, then I can bring up, okay, what song did you, you know, did you and your wife have a special song, or you and your husband have a special song together? And those memories come up, and then we can chat about those, and then we can sing those songs that they had. So it's not just, it's not just playing the songs and then, okay, carry on. It's actually that you can actually have the music create something with the people, which really is what it ends up being. It's creating relationship. And really, that's what my work boils down to. When I get to create relationship with people, and then I get to use music as a tool that I can create that relationship with, right? So,
because I was going to ask, like, how do you go about setting goals for? Because you do so many different, you have so many different groups here at Sherbrooke, and I really admire how you are able to create these connections with residents here and family members, but. Like, do you go into like your different groups with like goals in mind, or like how does that work?
Like initially, when we started Young Country Rebels, for instance, one of the goals was to get people who were who maybe didn't want to sing songs from the 30s because they were too young for those songs, and so to get people from all over the building together in a joint group where they could get to know people, have some peer support, right? Like, so they could actually and get to know those people, and they weren't all from just their own neighborhood. So that was so more social interaction with people. That's definitely a goal, and a lot of people in long-term care are definitely socially isolated. So that's a goal that probably most people in our building, you know, we can use for. Sometimes the goals relate to physio and OT and what they're doing. You know, sometimes I have worked with physio sometimes when walking with people. And so I will play music while they walk. Jan, one of our physios that is retired, she was famous for that. She would say, Candice, can you come and play a song while we walk together? You know, like play a march so that they could march to it. Or, you know.
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And I went to a workshop in Calgary, I don't know how many years ago, but we talked about Parkinson's and how dancing is really helpful for them, because it's something they don't think about, because when Parkinson's people freeze in their movements, then they all of a sudden can't get unfrozen. But when they're dancing, it's such an automatic thing that they do. It's kind of like walking. It's kind of like talking. It's kind of like singing. Singing is an automatic response that lots of people have. As soon as they hear a song, all of a sudden they can sing. We have so many of our people with dementia who can't tell me what they had for breakfast, or even if they had breakfast, but I pull out my guitar and start singing a song, and they can sing all the words to some of those old songs. So.
And I want to get to that, because I have so many questions about that.
Yeah.
But I didn't, like, I never thought of music with the rehabilitation. That's right. Fascinating.
So one of my very first, this really intrigued me, one of my very first practicums was in Vancouver at Lionsgate Hospital, and I got to work in the stroke unit. And so these people had just had strokes, a week to 10 days, week to 2 weeks, and it was the coolest thing because some of them could not say, hi, how are you, but they could sing it. Isn't that cool? Like, our brains are so complex and yet so cool. It's just, it's fascinating to me. So music can be a really helpful tool for lots of those things. I actually had I'm trying to remember who it was. It was a long time ago that I actually did a lot of that with. And so we would actually do, hello, how are you? And they would sing back to me. And so we practiced that. And it's repetition. Repetition is really important for those kinds of things. That was a really neat practicum and a really neat learning experience of like, oh wow, like just seeing the power of music that it can actually do those things.
So wow, that's cool. A powerful story. It's so cool. When you're coming up with your goals then for the different groups that you do, are they sort of like the, not the same, but like sort of consistent goals, but or do they change depending on like the residents that you're working with, or how does that work?
Sometimes, they'll definitely change depending on residents. I mean, especially as sometimes residents' abilities decrease, then my goals have to change to kind of meet where they're at, right? So, I mean, if they used to be able to play an instrument with two hands and now can only use one hand, well, then I have to find something that they can use, right? Or they could sing a song, now they can't sing a song, so how do I still get responses out of them? So then it might be more tactile stimulation. It might be more something like putting the auto harp on their lap so they can feel the vibrations of it, not just hear the sound, so they can feel it also. I have an ocean drum, same kind of thing, you know, they can hear it. You can put it above people. It gives a really cool sensation of, oh, like the ocean waves, and you know, I use lots of different instruments for lots of different things like that, like definitely tactile stimulation. Sometimes metal, like drums too, and metal, can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. It'll come to me when I'm not thinking about it.
Okay.
Gone. Sorry.
That's all right.
Darn, what is
it? Is it on your cart that's behind me?
It is. What the heck is it called? Why can't I? Cabasa. Cabasa. Oh. Cabasa. This guy. He's my favorite. Because it's very tactile, and you can put it in somebody's hand and still get some stimulation, right? They can feel something. So it's that, I mean, I can sing a song while I do that, right? You know, like if I did a certain rhythm and whatever, and I could just sing a song to go with it. It's neat. So I like to use lots of tactile thingies like that, like instruments, because that's really helpful for people, especially people who can't always say, you know, what they want, then tactile stimulation is really good. They can't use their voice as much.
So when you are working then with a group of residents, are you like, I know, cause I've seen you, mm-hmm. like you do an amazing job of like, you are in the moment, you're singing and you have a beautiful voice. But then are you also observing everyone and kind of assessing where everyone's at as well?
Yes. Cause yeah, absolutely. Which is why I don't have groups of 30 people, right? I have a group of, if it's just me, I don't want to have a group that's bigger than maybe 8-ish, you know, depending on the functioning of those people. Because I want to be able to give them that one-to-one attention. Oh, it's you, it's your turn. I want to be able to give them the one-to-one attention that they need. And if somebody's struggling, lots of times, I have a lady down in KV who often gets teary when we start singing, and the songs just bring back memories to her, and she often gets teary. So sometimes somebody needs to sit with her, or we need and I just tell her that it's okay. Music does that. Sometimes it brings back good memories and sad memories, or sometimes it's good memories that just make us teary, right? So lots of people who've had a stroke are very much that way. They often can cry the drop of a hat, you'd think I might have a stroke because I cry at the drop of a hat.
But you know what's interesting about that is I was going to ask you, is it hard for you to keep your emotions in check when you see others around you having emotional reactions to the music you're playing
usually
and that you're all singing?
Pretty good. Yeah. Usually I can do that. It kind of, if I'm going to, you know, have my moment, it'll be after I've, you know, been with the people. And if there's something that kind of gets me, sometimes when it's residents that are passing away and it's a really, I have one vivid memory. I have lots of vivid memories, but I have a vivid memory of a lady on second floor whose daughter was with her, and I was playing for them, and she looked up right up at her daughter and grabbed her hand and just looked at her, and it was just the most beautiful moment, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna lose it right now, you know, like, but I couldn't because I was in the middle of singing. But you know, like, you just have those. And yeah, after, and she still tells me, the daughter works in the tumbleweed, and she still tells me that that is one of the most precious gifts she was ever given. So I think that's really, yeah, that sums up lots of things that I get to do. You know, I get to be with people at the end of their lives, and I get to be with them during, and just help them to improve their quality of life, really.
In that case, did you already have a relationship with that resident where you felt comfortable, like, when in their last moments of their life? And does that, and then are there cases where you might not know a resident that well, but are you asked to be involved in it? How does that work?
Yes. Most of the time, if it's people I know really well, then yes, that I will go to them, you know, and spend time with them. And especially if I know that they love music, then of course, when they're in their last days, I would definitely spend time with them. And I have been asked to spend time with people who I do not know very well, and, you know, who I haven't been very involved with. And, but yeah, I can still spend time with them. Sometimes that looks a little bit different in terms of I don't know them as well, so I might not know what they want me to sing. But that's, I mean, often there's family there, or somebody will tell me, oh, they loved this kind of music, or they loved this kind of music, can you play that, you know? So that's a helpful hint, usually, to get you to play the right kind of music for them.
What is going through your mind when you're with someone who is who's end of life, and it could be their last moments, and they want you there with them? What is that like?
I mean, I think that's what it's a privilege for me to be there with them. To sing them to their last moments is very, very cool. It's a definite privilege. I am honored if people ask me, because it's not an easy process for family to go through. And so if they're asking for somebody to be with them, that means they obviously hold you or whoever in high regard, you know, that they want somebody there that can kind of be walk with them through that journey. So, yeah.
Thank you for answering that. Because, I was curious. Yeah. To my right, your left, there is a cart.
Yes.
Can you describe to our listeners everything? Not everything, because we could be here for a while, but okay, there's a lot of things on the cart. But what's on the cart? What's the purpose of the cart, Candace?
Well, because I'm mobile, I go to the neighborhoods, and have my groups on the neighborhoods, and it makes it so easy instead of having to figure out how am I gonna take all this stuff. That was the first thing, is, okay, I need a cart. I need to be able to get stuff from point A to point B. And actually, when I first started at Sherbrooke, my cart was probably double that size. It was really, really big. It's a much more manageable size now, I would say. But I always have I don't know what to call it. What do I call it? A CD player, but it's with my iPod. I don't use the CDs anymore. It's just got my iPod on it. I don't even know how that's possible. But and then my auto harp I use all the time. Like I said, I mentioned that it can be very tactile. So I will play the chords, and I often get the residents to strum. So in this type of motion, I will show you just so you can see. So, like, as I wipe out, So I would do the chords here, and they would hold on to this and do the strumming, so they can... And if you were to feel it, if it was laying on your lap, you would definitely feel the vibrations of that on your lap. Or sometimes I'll put somebody's hand on there too, and they can feel the vibrations of the strings too, if they are in later stages and can't hang on to something anymore. But it's amazing to me how many people, you put that in their hands, and I start giving them a little bit of a beat while we start singing, and how many people will all of a sudden just start doing it. And you're like, oh, look at that. You know, like, especially if they have some music in them, right? If they've played an instrument before or something like that. Then I have lots of hand instruments that can be for one hand, two hand, maracas and drums. And then I even have some... scarves, so sometimes we'll just do movement, so, you know, like we have fun scarves like that, and then lots of songbooks, which I don't use as much anymore, but I have some books like this that are thematic. Is that the word? How do you say that? Thematic? So that'll give me a theme, like to say if I want to talk about winter, well, then it gives me some quotes, it gives me some pictures, it gives me some ideas of what to talk about, and and then I can just, and some songs to use. So then it gives you some ideas, which is nice and helpful sometimes. I like to do that for definite for themes, like of course Valentine's and St. Patrick's Day and Easter and all those things. And once spring, then I often bring Easter eggs and all kinds of things, just to show, just as a stimulation, right? And then use music to add to that. So yeah, it's kind of fun to change it up and not just be doing the same songs. I also do, I always try to do music.
Speaking of music.
Of course it's my husband. Sorry. Oh my goodness.
That's okay.
So funny. I also do exercises to music a little bit. That's another thing that amazes me is that when I tell them to stretch up and we sing a song, if they're just in physio telling them to, can you stretch your arms up? Sometimes they can't do it, but when we start singing and they watch us do this as we're doing it, they can all of a sudden stretch their arms up. Because you're not thinking about that, right? You're thinking about singing, and then this just happens, right? And you're like, oh, look at that. I can just do that. Or, you know, like any of those kind of movements. So I just do simple movements. I don't do anything fancy, but it just, gets them moving a little. And it's amazing how much people can actually do when they're singing and not thinking about doing the exercises as much, right? So,
and maybe that's a nice segue into, like, I very nerdy of me, but I would love to know more about what's happening in our brains when we're listening to music. Because like you just said, like if I'm in the physio gym, maybe I don't want to stretch the way I want to stretch, or I'm being told to stretch, and yet if I'm listening to you play music, or if I'm singing a song and I see that, maybe it's easier. But when we are listening to music, or maybe when we're playing music, what's going on in our brains?
That is such a good question, because everybody responds a little bit differently to music. There is very few people, but there is a very few people that actually have a, what would be the word, like have a very bad response to music, like, right, like their bodies, their everything, they just, it does not do well with them. Music and them do not get along. But the majority of people respond well to music. What's going on in our brains? Well, it gives you the happy feeling majority of time, right? So people, I think it often makes them think of something happy, something good. Even if it's a memory that might be a little bit sad, it's still often a good memory. It's just because it was in the past. And so when things have changed in their lives, especially with lots of our elderly people, right? Things have changed and things aren't the way they used to be. So there's an element of sadness to that, right? So, but yeah, there's been a lot of research. They've done more and more research into what goes on in our brains, what goes on in our bodies when you listen to music. There's even studies that are, if they have music on in an operating room for people, people's blood pressure go down. There's so many different ways that music can be used in healthcare now. I think they're starting to actually see that. If it's, you know, specifically put out to not just, okay, let's just randomly put on songs. It has to be something they like, you know, like there's some of those kinds of things you want to do. So we actually do little iPods for people. And so we have some people who have responded really well. I've had numerous people who, I had one guy that I vividly remember having, as soon as we'd put fiddle music on, and he would literally kind of bounce up and down the halls and just be so happy, and you just put it on and it was just like the best to watch him just enjoy the music, right? Some we put on more to calm people too, like, so and those ones are based on their likes and dislikes, right? So if they were somebody who loved country music, then we put country music on. If they had certain artists, well, then we put those certain artists on. If somebody just says, I like old-time music, well, then you get a variety and you just, you know. But if somebody tells me they don't love something, well, then, you know, you make sure, okay, I'm not going to put those on because they don't love that. Yeah, so, I mean, there's, like I said, there's so many ways that the brain responds to music. I mean, I think they've been doing, you know, studies where they can actually see brain waves, you know, how things change in the brain. It's too technical for me, but to actually figure, you know, but it fascinates me because I know that there has been studies too about neuroplasticity in the brain and how we can use music to even help change some of those neural pathways, right? So, which is another really cool thing, which is what I think sometimes some of our people do who have dementia, who they can't, you know, they can't recognize, they can't say my name, they don't know who I am anymore, but they know my face or my voice and how I make them feel. And so that's how they recognize who I am, right? So it's a different, like, they can't necessarily read my name and recognize that part of me, but they recognize this part of me, my face, my voice, my, like I said, how I make them feel. And I think that's a really cool part of that too. And that goes back to, again, to relationship, really, because I really think that's a really key part, especially for, well, not just for our people with dementia, but for all of our residents, elders around here. Yeah.
There's so many threads you could pull from that lovely answer. I think one of them especially is like the whole, you know, because I think most people love music, but there's so many different types of music, different genres. And like, if you gave me, you know, jazz music, I don't think I would respond overly well. But if you gave me, you know, like a indie rock or something like that, I would respond well to that. So I love that sort of individuality of knowing who the residents are and doing that. But you're at the end when you're talking about how residents with dementia, they might recognize your face, they don't know your name, but they know I can connect with this person with music. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about, there is a resident in the first neighborhoods here at Sherbrooke. For privacy reasons, I can't say her name, but I think you know who I'm talking about. And I got some sound of you and this resident playing music together.
Oh, good. Okay, do you want to do another one?
Yeah, it worked out a bit.
That worked out pretty good, didn't it?
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, what about When the Saints? You like that one? Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, when the saints go marching in. Oh, Lord, I want to be in that number. When the saints go marching in. Oh, when the sun
begins to shine.
Oh, when the sun
Can you just share a little bit about what that experience is like with that resident and playing music with them?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when she first came in, and she actually lived in the houses, and the staff were beside themselves. They didn't know what to do with her because she was just following them everywhere. She had to be right with somebody, and they were going nuts. And then once they realized that she played music, then I got the call. Okay, Candace, can you come? We need help. And so I went every day for weeks to just try to get her to settle a little bit. And she was, she didn't have a great experience in hospital. So of course that plays into how she does when she first moves in. But then it was just that she sees me daily. We start to build a relationship, and she started to trust me. And then, I mean, now when I come in, she's like, oh, there's the boss. And I'm like, oh, that's so lovely. She thinks I'm the boss. And but she recognizes my face. She doesn't know my name. She couldn't tell you my name, but she recognizes my face and knows how I make her feel. And one of the neat things, even though it's not part of, I would say, my job description per se, is that I'm able to help right now give her a bath, because she first, actually, we started with washing her hair at the hairdresser, because she wouldn't let the staff wash her hair, so we tried at the hairdresser. But I had to go with because I was somebody that she knew really well, and so I would hold her hand and we would sing while she got her hair done. Now we don't have to sing anymore, and I'm just there, and she'll usually start joking around, and then as soon as she lays back and gets that warm water on her hair, she just melts, and she's so calm and relaxed, and she just goes through the whole rest of the experience, and it's wonderful. So then we decided I'm going to try with the staff to see if we can actually give her a bath and work on that. And she does so well with me, so I'm like, okay, we can do this with the staff also. And so it's just been a process of trust again, and her knowing that she's safe with me, and I think she knows that, and so then that's why she trusts me and allows me to do that with her. So yeah, so it expands to different areas. I mean, I actually, our former CEO, her mom, I used to get her up lots and lots of mornings because she would love to see me, and we would sing together, and that was what we did. Yeah, when she was having a really rough day, then I got the call again. Candace, can you come help? And so I would go down there and, yeah, help.
So you're building trust through music, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And music can be so intimate because you're sharing a relationship. Like, you're sharing something that might be really special to them, right? The lady on First Neighborhoods, she taught piano, was a teacher, and so I think that's a really big part of who she is, and so she's sharing that with me, and we are experiencing that together, and she's just come to, because we play music together all the time, she's come to really trust me and what we do, and she, like I said, she knows my face. She doesn't remember my name, but she sure knows my face.
And she can play piano. Like, I'll you know, I sort of, like, she's an amazing piano player. She knows words and sings with you. So you were saying just before we started rolling, can you explain, like, what's happening in the brain when someone who has dementia, that's kind of the last part that goes, is that right?
Yeah, so in a dementia process, so, I mean, there's many different types of dementia, but as the process continues on, so when you start off, it's the things that we know probably the best and from the longest time ago that kind of stay in our brains the longest, for especially in a dementia process. Now, some dementias are different, but I would say there's a majority that definitely there is that element. So will not be able to, they'll get to the point where they don't remember, you know, oh, did I eat? Did I not eat? Did I go to the bathroom? Did I not go to the bathroom? What did I do today? What day is it? They won't remember those kinds of things, but they can remember, you know, the names of their kids. They can remember the names of songs. They can sing all these songs. And we wonder why they can do that, but that's because in the dementia process, yeah, the part of the brain where the music is stored is one of the last parts of the brain to die. And because in a dementia process, that's what happens, is parts of the brain start dying. And so we've seen that. If you ever have a chance, look up a photograph of, or on like Google, like dementia brain versus a regular brain, and see what it looks like. And it's really interesting to see the spots that you can tell. Anyway, so that is one of the things that, is the last place of the brain to die. So we can still get lots of responses from people to closer to the end of their lives with music.
Like, did you know you were going to do this in your life? Like, is this something that, no?
No, no idea. When I first, my dad was a high school teacher, algebra teacher, but his minor was psychology, so he was a guidance counselor also. And when I was in school, there was no internet, and that makes me feel really old. There was no internet, but so you got catalogs from universities, and so my dad always went through them. And so, and I grew up in a small town, so he was looking through the catalog, and he found he saw music therapy, and he said, "I think this is something that you should look at doing." And I kind of hummed and hawed, because I'd either have to go to Vancouver or to Ontario, and I'm a homebody kind of girl, and I didn't really want to go either place. So it took me a while before I decided that I wanted to actually do that and experience it. I actually ended up knowing somebody who from Vancouver who had gone to do it and had told me that no, this is a good program. You need to do this, and you'd be perfect for music therapy. And so, so that was kind of the start of doing it. It wasn't something I envisioned myself doing. I probably envisioned myself being a teacher. That's what that was in my brain. I was going to be a teacher, probably not music, but I was just going to teach, because I always played school with my sisters, and I was always the teacher. They never got to be the teacher. I was the oldest, so I was bossy, and I got to be the teacher.
You did mention you spent some time in Vancouver hospital, but did you, like, how did you end up in long-term care in Saskatchewan?
Because my summer jobs were in my hometown, working in their nursing home. And so I worked as a care aide. So that was a really good experience, as much as I sometimes thought at the moment, what am I doing as a young 17-year-old? What am I doing? I can't believe I'm doing this. But it has served me well in terms of just knowing what the care aides actually do. And so that was helpful. And then the next few years I worked at that same nursing home, but I worked in their activities. They called it activities, but would be their recreation department. So, and they're part-time in the recreation and part-time in their therapies area. So I had, I had a really good idea of, oh yeah, I want to be in long-term care. Like I knew right away that was where I wanted to end up. I love kids, so I actually kind of hummed and hawed with that. But then I would have had to stay in Vancouver or somewhere in a bigger center, because it's not, especially when I started in music therapy, that wasn't a place you could get a job in Saskatchewan at all, right? So I think I knew from my summer jobs right away, I was like, I'm gonna be in long-term care. I love them. Yeah. They're my favorite.
If there is someone listening right now who perhaps works in long-term care and at the place where they work, they don't have a lot of, maybe they don't have a music therapist or a lot of resources that way. I guess we've sort of been talking about for the last 37 minutes, but like, why should music therapy be, you know, kind of almost, I would say, like a standard in a long-term care setting?
Yeah, I mean, it just can bring so much to their quality of life. Like, people just, I mean, it can change their mood. Just, you know, sometimes instantly, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. But, I mean, that's often, you know, one of the, especially with people with dementia, I have another very vivid memory of a gentleman on Second Neighborhoods who would get very aggressive, but he loved music. And so I would often walk the halls with him with my guitar, and I'd just sing to him. And then we'd eventually end up, you know, sometimes out on the patio, just singing, swinging in the swing out there, and just finally get him settled down. I have lots of memories. I have another memory of another gentleman on Second Floor, who was in the stairwell and wouldn't come out. And the staff said, "Oh, Candace, he's not going to come for you." And I said, "Well, that's okay. I'm just going to sing here for a while." And it was in the evening, and I just stood by the stairwell, opened the door, and sang, and finally he trucked up the stairs and came to me, and then we started walking the hall. And yeah, it sometimes takes longer, but again, you have to have that relationship, and you have to be willing to put in time in that relationship. And sometimes that might not always be just doing music. That might be doing, you know, might be just spending some time with them, finding out what they like, and just doing some of the recreation wonderful activities too, because then you get to know them and you get to see them in a different light. And I find that super helpful too, to just see, oh, they can do these things, you know. One of the first times I ever tried to do handbells with people with dementia, I remember the manager at the time on that neighborhood, she went to my manager and was like, "Does Candace know what she's doing? Like, she's going to do this with people with dementia. Like, they can't do this."
Can you explain what a handbell is? Do you by chance have one?
I didn't bring my handbells. Okay. They're actually called tone chimes. So it's just like a metal piece, and it has a little hammer on the top. And so they just have to kind of do a flick of the wrist, and it plays a beautiful sound. Sounds like a handbell. And so, but I do it that they don't have to read the music. I don't have a sign where they are reading, okay, that they have to follow C, D, E, F, G. I have it in my head, and I point to them when it's their turn to play. And so I remember one year we did it in March, which is actually Music Therapy Month, and we did it for music therapy. I made cookies, and I did the whole, it was quite a, anyway. But we did it, and we got videotaped, and then we watched it. And one of the little ladies says, "I was on TV." She was so excited. But it was such a cool experience, because lots of the care aides said, "We didn't know they could do those things." You know, they were just so surprised that they could actually do that. And so it was just, I mean, it's just a matter of, I just tell them, they're going to watch me, follow me. And I mean, I bounce right in front of them, so there's no way they can't know that it's their turn. But yeah, it's, yeah, it's a really neat, that's a really neat experience too, to have them do. So, yeah.
Last question for you. Yeah. If there's someone out there listening who would love to follow in your footsteps or go down the path of a music therapist, any advice for them?
I would start by going to volunteer with somebody. Go and see what they do, so that you kind of have a better idea, and then you'll kind of maybe have an idea of what setting you want to work into. Start with volunteering, you know, because that gives you a great idea of what we do. And then, then look at going to school somewhere, because now there's a lot more places you can go to school.
What do you love most about your job?
What do I love most about my job? I think I have a couple things. I love most because I work at Sherbrooke. So there's an element of working at Sherbrooke, which is it's like family, like, right? Like, there's a bunch of us that say we're lifers. We're going to be here for life. So there's that element of family that you don't always get in a workplace where, you know, when something's happening in your life, you know you have support from the people. Even if they might not be your, like, best friends, you know you have support from those people. So that's one of my favorite parts about working at Sherbrooke. And the other part about just doing my job is that I get to connect with so many different kinds of people, and they have so many amazing experience to share with me, and then I get to share that with them. And I feel honored that they let me into some of those. Like I said, music can be very intimate, and so it's gonna make me teary, but I feel very honored that they let me into those places, because it's not always the easiest to let people into those moments of things that they used to be able to do. Sometimes it's people that they used to be able to do and now can't do the same. And so how do I, you know, adapt that? I even had a gentleman he was on a few different neighborhoods, but who used to play the trumpet, wanted to still play the trumpet, could not play the trumpet anymore due to many, many things in his world. And so we ended up doing something different where he would play the keyboard, he would play the chords on a keyboard, and I would play the melody, and we made beautiful music together, and that made him so happy. And but he was able to chat with me about, we had to work through why he was so sad about not being able to play the trumpet anymore, and why, and then we got to do something different. He actually got to learn something new, and that was a really cool experience for him too. So it was, yeah, it's neat when you get to kind of help somebody, yes, accept the change in their bodies, and then move on and do something different. And some people it's not that way. Some people it's just they love music and they just want to keep doing it, and that's great too. But sometimes they get those kinds of things too, where it's really neat to see somebody really, you can see how that improved their quality of, changed them, because they got to do something totally different. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing so much today. Yeah. And I think it speaks so highly of your character that so many people from all walks of life, and whether they're facing physical or cognitive challenges, allow you in and trust you and make you a part of their lives. So I think that speaks so highly of you. And it's such a privilege to get to see you do your thing every day. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, like I said, it's really all about relationship. And that's what I find, that's what I love about Sherbrooke, because it's about relationship. And so I think that just fits well with what I do. So
thanks, Candace.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
You've been listening to Season 6, Episode 7 of YXC Underground. My name is Eric Anderson. I host, produce, and edit this local independent podcast. My thanks to Candace Ukrainitz for being on the podcast and sharing her passion for music and helping others with listeners. Please follow YXC Underground wherever you find your podcasts. You can find YXC Underground on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the website yxcunderground.com. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review if you like what you hear. Follow YXC Underground on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly Twitter. That's where you'll see some wonderful photos of Candace taken by Saskatoon photographer and my friend, Rana Andres. I also want to thank my cousin, Andrew Dixon, for the original theme music, and to Saskatoon's Danger Dynamite for taking such good care of the website. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge that these interviews were gathered on Treaty 6 territory and the traditional homeland of the Métis. YXC Underground is a production of the Salt Hammer Production Company. My name is Eric Anderson. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon, Saskatoon.
Any one of those? What about you? Are my son
singing? Guys here.
Okay.
Yes, those guys are singing. Okay, come over here. Come over here, honey.
I can sing You Are My Sunshine.
Okay. They'll sing You Are My Sunshine with us, okay? Are you ready? Yeah, get to the right spot. There you go. Okay. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The
skies are gray.
How did I do?
Very good.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
He could sing with us anytime, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take him. Yeah.